Welcome to the GIST podcast. In this podcast, Rebecca O'Brien is joined by Professor Lisbeth Goodman, who is Professor of Creative Technology Innovation, Director of the Smart Lab Digital Media Institute and MAGIC, Multimedia and Games Innovation Centre, at the University of East London, and also Director of Future Lab. Professor Goodman will be giving one of the keynote speeches at the GISC 2009 conference in Edinburgh.
Professor Goodman, thank you for joining us today. Can you share with us what you do and explain a little bit about Future Lab and Smart Lab?
Sure. Both Future Lab and Smart Lab are, I am honoured to say, two of the most important educational technology think tanks and do tanks, making tanks or making spaces in the educational sector internationally. Smart Lab I founded some 16 years ago. We started out with BBC Interactive at the Open University and have evolved and mainly focus on creating technology tools both with and for largely disadvantaged sectors of society. So people with extreme disability, whether physical or cognitive, women in domestic violence shelters, women returning to study, kids in the developing world, kids in hospital, etc. So basically in the Smart Lab group, the aim is on bringing together groups of interdisciplinary scholars, engineers, medical doctors, architects, social policy analysts, an NGO, third sector workers, together in teams to address social problems. And the aim there is only to make tools that are really needed, perhaps only by one person, but really needed as a communication or a learning device, and to develop those tools with the individual who needs them, then to try to extrapolate from there and make tools that could be used by many people the world over. Future Lab, on the other hand, aims at the more of the mainstream educational sector, making educational tools, but also focusing on the methods and the not only methodologies, but the pedagogies of best practice for learning and for teaching, and really has a focus on learner voice, user-centered design, and the really exciting kind of non-standard ways in which we can bring curricula to life for many different kinds of learners in many different situations.
Could you give me an example of how games and multimedia is used to help in that process?
Absolutely. Games, I think, and I speak as someone who was for a long time a bit of a Luddite in relation to games, and I don't see very well myself, so I actually have a hesitation personally to things that are too screen-based or require a lot of vision or eye strain. However, there are many kinds of games now. They aren't all online. They don't all require you to sit in front of a computer for long periods of time and therefore tune out the so-called real world around you. There are games which enable you to move around, to dance, to move, to make music, to locative games, which are handheld games which enable you to move through cityscapes or streets or to engage in physical activity, can bring the visceral part or the embodied part of learning together with a whole range of learning activities to do with sight specificity, cultural objects, relationships to other people. So there are many, many games. Future Lab's made some amazing games for learning, including Virtual Savannah, which I happen to love, which gets kids moving around in character, as it were, as animals on a savannah, learning about the outdoors, but also learning about their relationships to each other and to technology. That's a favorite. There's also a game called Trust, which Smart Lab made, which is what we call a co-opetition game for disabled children who may have different levels of ability and need to learn to pay attention to and move with each other in order to both win. So in the Trust game, you don't win a prize, and it's certainly nothing to do with competition or violence or the usual shoot 'em up scenarios. It's to do with two kids learning to be present with each other, to calm down rather than get excited, and to move in tandem so that they experience more in different ways. And that involves some haptics and some robotics to help the kids whose bodies don't move voluntarily. But it also involves just a lot of cross-sector knowledge about what it is to calm down and embrace learning and co-presence with other kids in a really lovely aesthetic environment.
So your work that you've just touched on there is looking at kind of younger learners and students. How does the work that you do help academics and researchers?
That's a fantastic question, and I would argue that all of us benefit from games for learning, and whether they're mobile games or whether they're high-tech games or low-tech games. I use theatre games in all my training for academics of all ages, varieties, and geographical locations, because theatre games, which are Again, visceral, which gets you moving and breathing and remembering the relationship of your body to your mind and space, actually do help to connect various parts of the learning pathways, if you want to call them that, and help to engage you with the learning process imaginatively, physically, and in every other way. So many of the games that we would use for kids, we will also use different versions, perhaps with a different aesthetic to the animations or a different set of interfaces. But whatever the games are, they're really, to my mind, about reminding each and every one of us where we are in physical space and what we can do with our own imaginative learning process, using technology as a tool to get us somewhere we need to go intellectually, but not as a name or a thing in itself. Technology is a way, a scaffold that we can build around what we're doing to help us empower all learners to reach a higher level.
What would you say are some of the challenges that academics and learners face when they're using these new types of technologies that they might not be quite familiar with?
There are huge challenges with all technologies. I have visual trouble, as I said, so some of those 3D environments where you move around in 3D can actually make people feel quite ill, so there are physical challenges to some of the 3D rich environments. There are physical challenges. Not everyone can move their bodies in all of the ways, even as required by the Wii controller, which I do believe is one of the most fantastic innovations in game design, not least because it gets people up and moving. But there's also a block. There's a mental block that says that games are for play and learning is serious. And the whole serious games movement, as it were, has made an impact in that field. I think there's a lot further to go. There's a lot more research to be done about the ways in which we learn differently in role, in different characters or persona, aspects of what we learn, whether we're children or adults, that we learn differently if we can learn in avatar form or virtual form than in person. And some of those really early lessons that we learned in the earliest days, I used to work at the Open University in the early days of the transfer to interactive media, and some of the lessons we learned there about the importance of connecting learners, that it's not distance, all learning is embodied and connected, and at some point you need to meet or at least have some exposure to the person whose ideas you're engaging with. Those same lessons, I think, carry through in media now, and in the gaming world we have to find new ways to solve them and to create co-presence which is safe and responsible and well thought through, but which engages learners and teachers and innovators together in the co-design of really useful learning spaces.
How do you see what JISC is doing to increase the usage and awareness of multimedia technology in colleges and universities as enhancing your work?
I think what JISC is doing is absolutely amazing, hugely helpful to put the role of technology, and particularly specialist personalized learning, technology-enhanced learning, learning for disability and accessibility tools is such an important part of what we all do and is so often ignored in so many countries around the world. So the work that JISC does in supporting these kinds of projects for many different groups and across sectors, but also the work that JISC does in promoting this work, making sure that people understand what technology-enhanced learning can be, and that it's not just about making more fancy hardware and software stuff that not everybody wants to engage with, but it really can connect creatively. And I'll give an example of a kind of project that I would love to see JISC embracing. I have a colleague, Steve Cooney, musician, very talented guy, but he's invented a new music notation language, which is intuitive and which can be learned quickly by even two-year-olds, very quickly, in half an hour rather than a year's training, and that in learning the music early enough, both sides of the brain, as it were, to simplify the story, are speaking to each other, but we need to prove it in careful, rigorous study. But it's so obvious that that's going to help with all kinds of learning, both the diagnostics of learning and our learning about how people learn and when people are learning, but also individual personalized learning for kids who might need quite specialist tools to help them to learn. Those really early tools that we can give, which are to do with music learning, learning to vocalize even if you don't have a physical voice, learning to project your voice through amplified pickups, for instance, all those things that have to do with what has often been marginalized as a kind of ghetto field of accessible technology or assistive technology. I really see in that field the most exciting innovations coming forward, because that's where you're designing for universal access. And when you've designed something that works for the most extremely disabled but perhaps really bright person, and you study that carefully over the time that it takes, then we can take those tools, a bit like the Wii controller, and make them accessible to everyone. And that gets everybody moving and learning differently as a community, not just as individuals.
Just touching on digital literacy, do you think that further and higher education prepares students for what employers need? And if you perceive a gap, what do you think needs to be done to try and pull these two together?
The field of digital literacy has, in my opinion, it's got a long and checkered history. It's such an important subject, and it's partly a terminology issue that in America, the same terms are used very differently in this field as in all other fields. In the so-called developing world, this term has a different currency, is in and out in different cultures, in and out of respect or the teaching vocabulary. Much more importantly, I think that some of the tools which have been tested have been much too closely tied, in my own personal opinion, to particular industry tools and therefore to a profit base in a commercial society, which has not been helpful. So that there have been doors closed and a closing of minds to some of the impacts of digital literacy if they're too closely tied to, and I won't name names, but to any large industry product or tool. And therefore, I think the only way forward for digital literacy of all, if that's truly our aim, is the open source movement. And to be funding specific research projects that use industry lead standard tools when they're appropriate, but that also fund the people who spend their time developing alternatives to those which can grow and be adapted and personalized and made available for free. It's the only way we're really going to achieve true digital literacy. So I am pushing for the open source movement.
And finally, we are delighted that you're able to join us at our annual conference in Edinburgh this month. One of the big things at our conference is looking around the digital student and the student's learning experience. What sort of things would you like to see coming out of this debate? And how do you see your work contributing to that sort of discussion?
Well, I'm absolutely delighted to be coming to speak at the event, and with such a rich mix of really experienced people who've been working in these fields of, if you want to call it technology-enhanced learning or various forms of learning and technology development for many years. What I'd personally like to see is an embracing across institutions and beyond the usual sectoral divide, by which I mean for those in the university sector, it's been there have been certain sorts of funding. You can go to the research councils. You might go to DISC for certain kinds of projects. Then you need to test and trial. That's not properly funded. There have been all these divides and gaps where there's a lot of cross-sector activity and not all of it is joined up. And I think that therefore, well, we all know that therefore some of the best projects which could benefit the most people and which could be done very quickly because the technology has all been developed, but developed by different companies with different stakes and different background IP models and different resistances to certain other companies and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what I would love to see coming out of this event is some kind of movement that we might all be able to follow up after the event to make sure that we keep connecting the dots and to make sure that projects and therefore the people they might benefit are not falling through the cracks while some other funding structure is evolved around some other very important but not connected in way. So I guess, again, I'm fighting for maybe an open sourcing of the cross-sector community and our ideas. Enough educators that I know and enough researchers that I know, I mean, self-definitely included, are much, much more concerned about improving the technologies for learning and therefore the learning experience for everyone. And if we take that as our bottom line and really move toward it together, then I think we'll achieve a lot more than we will do if we wait for certain structures and policies and funding bodies to come behind anybody's initiative. So I guess that's what I'll be pushing for again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a JISC podcast. For further information, please visit www.jisc.ac.uk. Thank you.